It's Tuesday, June 8th, 2021. I'm Tanya Harris, and welcome to TMI Daily, your daily roundup of everything people are talking about online since they aren't allowed to talk about it in person. Countless websites and apps around the world went down for about an hour this morning, including sites for CNN, The Guardian, and The New York Times. This was especially terrible for liberals who woke up this morning and weren't sure what to be outraged about. With only 13 states already at 70% vaccination, it looks like America won't reach President Biden's goal of having 70% of the total U.S. population vaccinated by July 4th. On the bright side, we're still doing significantly better as a country with vaccinations than our shared goal of trying to get to bikini weight by the summer. America's next top convict, Donald Trump, said that the solution to cyber attacks is to stop using computers and to go back to doing things on paper. This makes sense considering that paper is the only form of communication he hasn't been banned from. The website Snopes claims to have debunked the idea that Trump wore his pants backwards at his North Carolina Republican convention speech on Saturday. Although, much like the 90s backwards dressing hip-hop group Crisscross, Trump does make you want to jump, mostly through broken windows at the Capitol. At the same event, the only woman willing to see Eric Trump nude, Laura Trump, announced that she is not running for Senate in North Carolina. Guess someone explained to her that senators can't pardon anyone. On Sunday, Florida governor and eventual Newsmax special commentator Guns comparing the assault rifles to a Swiss Army knife, which is a perfectly acceptable comparison when you consider how many school kids have been massacred with the Swiss Army corkscrew and nail file. Kid Rock shocked fans this week when he used a homophobic slur on stage. That story again, Kid Rock shocked fans by being exactly who we all know he is. General Hospital star Kirsten Storms revealed that she underwent surgery due to a cyst in her brain and would be taking the next few weeks to recover. This shouldn't affect the storyline of the show, however. Like most soap opera characters, there's an evil twin to fill in during her recovery. It was announced this morning that The Bachelor host Chris Harrison is leaving the show for good after his racism controversy. Unlike most breakups, Chris won't be able to live in the bachelor pad while considering his future. Now let's send it over to tonight's TMI Daily cast and crew roundtable. Stay safe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of TMI Daily. I'm Veronica Aiello, and as always, I'm joined by some of my TMI Daily crew. Let's go around and say hello to everyone watching at home or listening to our TMI Daily podcast. Let's start with you, Pete. What have you been up to since we were off?
Nothing of any value, just a lot of stuff that involves me not being home. Strangely enough, working makes me stay home. I don't get it. But I do want to say that I am wearing pants today and they're on forwards.
Good. That's a good thing. Joe.
Hi, everyone listening on Google Podcasts, and a very happy Ghostbusters Day. I'm very excited about this one. I am actually not home right now. I am at another person's home doing some dog sitting for a while they are off at Disneyland. So, woohoo!
I like your shirt, by the way, Joe.
I need sure?
in my collection. Yes.
Your it's got all the instructions on there on how to make ramen.
Oh my god, I need that shirt desperately in my t-shirt collection. Elizabeth,
I'm actually back in my office. I just went back in on Monday. And I was telling them before the show, there are motion-activated lights, so if I don't move enough every 30 minutes or so, the lights turn off, so I have to, like, do the wave to get them to come back on.
So when you do that, you're not getting excited about what we're saying. You just have to do that.
No, I'm at home. I'm between desks right now. Okay. I have to build my new one that came in finally, which came in, by the way, just in time for me to go back to the office.
It's like your job's like one of those smart watches that tells you you're not standing up enough to do
it. Yeah, basically. Yeah. I'm not kidding. I will be typing And luckily there are like a lot of windows, so it's not like total darkness, but I'll be typing and suddenly the lights will go out and I'll just be like, it's enough to wave him back on. Future baby. Woo.
And Danny, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It was actually nice to finally meet some of the cast in person during the break. Yeah. So yeah, it was kind of weird. Like, hey, you're out of a Zoom box.
Yeah. I kept saying,
I like to point out he said some.
Not everyone's on. Not everyone's on.
That's what we have. Danny, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you know, I'm going to. Who was better looking in person than in the Zoom box? He met you before, so you don't count.
Yeah, he doesn't count. Oh, yeah. You know who? Norman.
Good answer.
And speaking of Norman, it's also National Pet Appreciation Week. So let's be nice to Norman, Pete.
Yes. No. Oh, thank you for that, Danny.
I'm appreciating my friend's pet today by pet sitting.
There you go.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's allegedly National Best Friend Day.
Yeah. That's
it. It is.
I saw that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said allegedly.
Well, you thought I was going to bring up the thong? No.
Okay, so let's start tonight's show. We were off last week and there's a lot to catch up on, so we're going to start tonight with just one question, in which I'll ask you one question about the stories we didn't get to cover while we were off. A lot happened with former President Donald Trump last week. He gave his first campaign-style speech in months at the North Carolina Republican Convention. No news outlets covered it live, and the biggest thing to come out of the speech was a controversy about whether he was wearing his pants backwards. His blog site was taken down due to lack of interest, and Facebook announced that he is banned from their platform until at least January 2023. So my question is, are we starting to see Trump's relevance in our country's politics begin to fade? Or like herpes, will he reappear eventually just as bad as before? So what are your thoughts on that? Let's start with you, Elizabeth.
Well, his relevance specific to him, kind of, but overall impact and destruction, no. Because we have, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, like Marsha Blackburn, all these other senators and representatives who are constantly, you know, I'm sorry, I have a migraine too on top of everything else, but they're still following his policies, his attitudes, the aggressive division of everything, making very us versus them, you know, mentality. So, I mean, his relevance is still there. And the fact that the Facebook ban theoretically only lasts till 2023. Well, gee, that's just in time to ramp up a campaign for 2024, isn't it? Like, and he's still being covered left and right. He's not having a direct impact, I'd say, but there's still an impact.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Pete?
See, I kind of disagree on that. I think that he's really that. Yeah, they're still going to talk about him because it gets people to watch TV to hear what kind of insane shit he says now. But the fact that no one covered his speech on Saturday, it was the first speech he's made since leaving office, that no one covered it live, and that the only thing that came out of the speech really was about his pants possibly being on backwards, that says a lot. I mean, you know, and it seems like we're reaching this point now where what is he going to do or say that's going to keep him relevant? Now, yeah, you know, Elizabeth's right. There are all the acolytes, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Matt Gaetz, the Marsha Blackburns, who are going to be, you know, like Trump Republicans. But you know, the problem for Trump Republicans is that they can't mimic him if he's not giving them something to mimic. And if he's not out there constantly creating more inertia, you know, I mean, his blog site, because that's what it was a blog site. His blog site closed down after just over a month because not enough people were actually looking at it. And that alone, like, people want to say, oh, no, the worst thing that could have possibly happened was he lost the presidency. No, that's not the worst thing. The relevance is where, you know, he's hurt most. Like the fact that they had to shut something down because not enough people were looking at it. that says a lot. I mean, the Facebook ban is until at least January 6, 2023, but they say at that point they're going to reevaluate it, that they're not saying that on that date he's just magically going to be allowed back. They're right. just saying that they'll reevaluate it at that point, which in my mind means they'll push it off until probably the summer of that year. And depending on, you know, what state of conscious he's in at that point, they'll make a decision. But yeah, I think that, you know what, the problem for them is like any other gang. Once the head gets lopped off the leader, they really don't, they're kind of like aimless. So they're all going to try and be Trump lights. And, you know, and the problem is, it takes a lot of work to be that big of an asshole all the time with that much. But with charisma, he's a charismatic asshole. And the problem is they're just being assholes with none of the charisma. And that's hard for them to continue doing if he's not going to be leading them into it.
I agree to a certain point, but the problem is the damage is still going to be done to people and institutions and policies. I know, but it's going to continue whether he's involved or not.
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, people like Marsha Blackburn were this way before Trump even walked into office. I mean, there's been this movement towards these radical mm-hmm. right-wing people, same way there's radical left-wing now, too. And it seems like that's growing more and more on both sides. The only problem is that, you know, it's kind of like rudderless right now. Like you could mm-hmm. still point to like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and AOC and say those are, you know, from the radical left side, from the more far left side, those are the leaders, and they still have a very big platform. The far right doesn't have a leader any longer. And mm-hmm. and so, yeah, they're all going to propose all this nonsense and a lot of the stuff is going to stick, but a lot of it's not going to stick because there's just not somebody strong enough to push it through.
Well, we shall see.
Hopefully not. Yeah.
No, not. So several Republican states, including Florida and yesterday Texas, have signed into law bills that ban the use of vaccination passports in their state. So my question is this purely right-wing politics, or are there any good arguments for not requiring people to prove that they have been vaccinated? Thoughts?
More of a question just for clarity. When they say ban the use of vaccine passports, does that mean like private companies can't ask yeah. for one? Or
in the state, they're saying that they'll okay. go after any company that actually tries to force its employees to prove that they've been vaccinated.
Oh, so
Florida's one is actually a little bit more aggressive than Texas's, but mm-hmm. they're basically the same thing.
I see. So yes, government not being involved, as is the way of Republicans. Got it. Got yeah. it. Noted.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They're going to be going after employees.
So yeah, so this is for employees, because I know like federal, you can't stop like when the airplane was like to be able to fly out of the country and things like that. There's nothing that they can do to stop that. So if they have you fly out of Miami International, you're still going to have to prove your vaccination if you're going to another country, because that has yeah. nothing to do with them. So is this basically down to like employment, like the proof that you were vaccinated to be employed? And that's
no,
it?
it's other things too,
like stores. Like if you go into a store, like people might say you can't come in unless you have a vaccine
yeah.
passport.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like the cruise industry is up in arms right now because in theory, they want to be able to make sure that people that get on a cruise ship have been vaccinated, because they know most people won't get on a cruise ship right now after, you know, what happened last year at the beginning of the pandemic that kind of thing. And Florida won't let them do it. So almost all of the major cruise lines that all leave out of Miami are now trying to figure out a way around.
Or Tampa, ruling. Or Key West, or Key Fort West, Lauderdale.
Tampa, but also in Texas, too. Like, was it yeah. Galveston? Or that's a huge
Galveston, yeah,
there.
Yeah. yeah. Galveston.
Wow.
Well, I saw something interesting today. Here in Los Angeles, we have a outdoor theater that does every summer called Street Food Cinema. Mm-hmm. And they are starting again. They are not doing just drive-ins, but they're also doing regular where you can go out. But what they're doing is there's a vaccinated section and a non-vaccinated section.
Interesting.
And the vaccinated section is the good part. It's down the center, stuff like that. And then the non-vaccinated is in the back off to the sides. So you can get a ticket if you're not vaccinated without proof, but you got to sit in the shitty section. So I wonder, like, if this is this Florida law or Texas law or something, would that prevent that? Because they're technically saying you can come if you're not vaccinated, but you're going to have to sit in the non-vaccinated shit seats.
Oh my god! Then they can finally claim oppression for once. Oh god!
Yeah, because wouldn't that be discrimination? I mean, I'm all for
it. What it means is they've made two sections, but the vaccinated section just happens to be nicer.
Yeah.
Is it discrimination like that, if you pay more money at the bowl for the box seat? Is that discrimination?
Well, the unfortunate side effect is...
Logic, though? Like, if you're saying, okay, you're going to have a section for vaccinated and non-vaccinated, so people that choose not to be vaccinated, then they shouldn't be afraid to sit with other people that are not vaccinated as well, right?
It just almost sounds like you're... Like flashback to white, non-white.
Yeah, right? That's the like, but that's what they're going to try to claim.
That's what they're going to claim, exactly. Yeah, Pete.
Yeah, it's funny because they're going to claim that this is like segregation, which is one of the things they're trying to pass to put back into effect all these voting restriction laws. But don't worry about that. Don't think about that. That's not the issue. I saw a fairly well-respected doctor today on television say something which makes a lot of sense, and that is that it doesn't really matter if we have these passports, because affluent people will make the decisions on whether or not on how businesses do their business, meaning that, like, if people who have money don't want to go to a store because they're letting just everybody in without being tested, the store is going to do worse. If the store does worse, then they're going to make the decision to do what they have to do. You know, same thing's going to happen like next week. In theory, everything's supposed to open up here in California. If that's the case, if like AMC, or any of the other movie theaters say, well, yeah, we're going to open up at full capacity and we're not going to require masks or anything else, I won't go to a movie theater. I mean, I considered going to movies last week during the day. I didn't get a chance to, but I would have done it during the day. But I won't go into one now, knowing that the guy sitting next to me is probably not vaccinated because he's sitting next to me not wearing a mask. I mean, and that's the thing. When business starts hurting because people aren't going to spend their money in the places that they might have in other cases, that's where you're going to start to see, businesses saying, we don't care what the state says, we're going to do this because this is our business and this is how we have to treat it.
And like I said, I joked earlier, but it's true. Theoretically, Republican politics are hands-off government, but businesses do business on their own and make decisions, and they're like corporations and businesses are people too. So therefore, they should be allowed to make their own decisions, except when they want to play politics and control situations and make their stupid statement with this, anti-passport vaccine situation.
It's so funny how libertarian Republicans are being these days about this, because this is not a
I was going to say, well, but the government being involved in the private business is not a libertarian ideal, right? Like that's antithesis of that.
It's so funny because they don't want us to, they don't want you to tell, they don't want anybody to tell you what to do with your body unless you're pregnant.
Yeah,
because it's a whole totally different story. So
they want to be all up in that business if you're pregnant.
Yeah,
but not after and not before, but just during. Once the kid's out, he's his own private corporation. Yeah. Good luck.
And if he wants to get COVID, go for it.
They do get involved after because they want to know when you're going to be back.
What?
They do get involved afterwards because they're always trying to rush you to get back to work.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the same people that are getting fake vaccination cards are mad when illegals get fake work papers.
Yeah,
so they can work and not live it.
I feel like we have all been called out, and like liberals are called out for inconsistent application of policies and or theories when Republicans do this shit constantly, and it's the most hypocritical, ridiculous fucking thing in the world, and it drives me nuts. I don't ever want to be told I've been like logically inconsistent again about this kind of thing, because this is like the most hypocritical shit. Oh, so fucking stupid.
Yep.
God damn it.
So although most of the pandemic restrictions in California are set to be lifted on June 15th, Governor Gavin Newsom said on Friday that he is not lifting the state of emergency, which gives them executive power to make decisions over health and safety in the state. Does anyone understand what this means, and will this hurt him with the recall vote? Pete, let's start with you. Can you explain this?
I was really confused about this when I first read about it the other day, but then I kind of dug a little deeper. All it basically means is that once they announced the emergency declaration, he had emergency powers that a governor doesn't usually have, meaning that he was able to close schools and to close businesses and to do all the things that he had to do. And what he's basically saying right now is that, everything is going to reopen on June 15th. But in the event we get another spike, I don't want to have to reapply for emergency powers because of how political it's become. So at least I still have them in the event I have to say this county has to close down again or this area has to roll back in some way. And so it really doesn't do anything other than just keep him in the same position he was in. And of course, Republicans are already jumping on it. And again, I know the first three questions sound like we're just bashing Republicans, but guess what? They're doing.
They fucking have it coming.
Yeah, sorry. It's so funny because a study came out this afternoon. Now it came out from UCLA, so some people say, "Oh, it's partisan because it's a California state school." But it showed that the states that closed down and had more stringent pandemic rules did better both health-wise and better economically than the states that didn't. So a state like Florida and or Texas that both opened up in the middle of pandemic and claimed how great everything was actually was considerably worse economically than California was. California, actually, of all the states in the country, had the best pandemic financially of any state.
And, yeah, we actually ended up with a surplus. So
we ended up with a surplus. So again, that's why we're recalling the governor because they have to try and use this as some excuse to say, oh, he's infringing on your rights. And again, it's just more minutia, more nonsense.
I will say this about our governor: if you want to lounge on a carpet with your wife, you don't have to wear a mask. Go ahead. Look it up on Google. Governor Newsom and rug. That's all you have to look up.
and a waste of taxpayer money.
But the thing is, we could every governor, every like mayor, every president prior to the current one has been caught doing something stupid during the pandemic. And you know what it is? It's because it's human nature like anything else. Like the other night, I got out of the car for the first time in I don't know how long without my mask on and walked towards a group of people because I had to pay at a parking lot. And I realized about halfway up, towards them that I wasn't wearing a mask and turned around and ran back to the car and got the mask. So it's not like people don't just make mistakes. We all do it.
That happened to me. I was at a brewery, my friend's brewery that they own here in North Hollywood. You should visit Lawless Brewery if you're in town. And they have, a mask policy and everything, and it's spaced, and I was outdoors. But you can have your mask off at the table, obviously. And I went to get up and go to the bathroom. I strutted to that bathroom like it ain't no thing. Sat down and realized on the toilet and realized, oh, I forgot my mask. And I gotta once I'm done in here, I have to put my shirt over my mouth or something. I compromised trying to dart back to my table because I was like, oh my God, I feel like a jerk. And it's just, we are all getting a little lax, obviously as we're getting more confident and I'm pretty sure I don't know everybody who was there, but I knew a lot of people there and I knew they were vaccinated. So that was a comfort. And I think that was your guard's down just a little more, day by day.
I got a second going to visit Lawless Brewery in North Hollywood, support local brewers. And they're fantastic. They have a beer there that tastes like a rosé and they call it a brosé and you must try it.
It's very good.
Let me ask you a question. That actually sounds good. I want to ask about those kind of things. If they have a beer that tastes like a rosé, why don't you just get a rosé?
It's a rosé with a higher alcohol content, Pete.
And it's not.
When did beer become? It tastes just like chicken. When did this happen?
I love it. I absolutely. Bottle Logic makes a beer that tastes like a Dole Whip, and it's fantastic. So
I mean, you can have a watermelon margarita, but that doesn't mean I'm gonna go out and just buy watermelon.
Did you guys have the watermelon margarita, by the way? Because I didn't get to try it. Was it good?
I haven't had it yet.
Yeah.
Y'all saw it. Yeah. Trust me, I'm saving that for a very special occasion, and I'm going to be mixing it with my Dos Hombres mezcal that I love.
Nice.
So, ooh, that sounds good. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so let's move on because we have a lot more to talk about. So last weekend, tennis star Naomi Osaka stirred a lot of controversy.
Tennis superstar Naomi Osaka is back at home because she refused to do press interviews one day after
due to what she calls mental health issues.
The organizers of the Grand Slam tournament is now reaching out to Osaka offering support.
Or is it just mental health is a very challenging issue?
Their statement says,
what do you think
about
that?
Complex.
Let's start with you, Elizabeth, and then
what affects one individual.
No, because even some actors don't talk to the press when they're promoting things.
The four-time Grand Slam winner and highest paid female athlete
the press
in the world
gets some press publicly tours.
Shared her struggles with mental health.
So no one is obligated in that sense. I understand, yes, there's a business. She's very popular. I know all of that and understand that. But like I said the other day with the Olympic documentary I was talking about, I think it was like The Weight of Gold or The Price of Gold, I think is the title of it. Weight of Gold that Michael Phelps produced. You know, these athletes at these high levels, especially female athletes, are under such intense pressure. It is like destroying their brain and mental health. And so basically she was saying, like, I want to take a mental health day and I don't want to go out there and answer a million questions. And then they tried to be like, well, you have to, and kick, you know, they kicked her out of the thing. And it's ridiculous. Like, and I think that, you know, applies to other celebrities and stuff too. It, those kind of things can be very draining. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think it's bad that someone stood up and said, I can't do that. I don't want to do that. Can I, like, take a break? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, the process itself needs to change, and, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Pete, and then I'll go to Joe.
Well, I mean, I'm kind of torn because, you know, the problem is that it you know, when you're running a business like any other business, and I can only equate this to kind of like when we do this show, we all say, you know, let's share the show, because the thing is, you've got to get people to actually listen or watch what you're doing. And, you know, the interview portion is part of the show in a sense with when it comes to the athletes, because, you know, it's almost like somebody once told me you can't just play when you do something. You actually have to have, you know, also think about the economics of it too. And the reality of it is people show up to see these people perform a sporting event, but at the same time, they wouldn't care about these people if there wasn't some kind of history about them, some kind of like relationship to them. If they're just going to become faceless people that get on a court or get on a field and start playing, you do reach a point where you say, well, why am I going to root for that person? And when they win, why am I going to care? And so, you know, I get it that people do deserve to have free space. And I mean, it's the same thing with a movie. Like, you know, if somebody makes a movie and they don't go out and promote the movie, what was the point in doing the movie? Because, you know, if they're not helping people, you know, gain some awareness to want to go see it, then, you know, it's like they're doing everything in a vacuum where nobody's going to actually pay attention to it.
Well, they're just doing it for themselves. And that's all they care about. It's like, okay, I like to act. I just want to act. I don't care if anybody watches it or not, because I'm doing this for myself. Right.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, they have to realize the economic side of it too. And part of the economic side of it is selling these athletes to the public. And it goes beyond, you know, just putting them on, you know, on the field or on the court and saying play, because, you know, you just, you know, the people that seem to always have the most rapport, you know, with the public are the ones that people think they know, regardless of whether or not we really know them. You know, it's like when OJ didn't murder two people several years ago, we were all shocked that he didn't do that, because we didn't think he would ever do something like that, because we thought we knew him. You know, and so it's like why? Because he became part of our everyday world. We knew who he was. We knew like sort of things about his life. And, you know, and it's a bad example, obviously. But at the end of the day, it probably put people in the seats at football games. It definitely put people in the seats at movies and TV shows he was involved with. Definitely helped Hertz when he was working for them. So, yeah, I mean, they should be allowed like anybody else to have a certain amount of off time. But again, if they're going to get money out of these tournaments, they should also have to do what the tournament wants, meaning that they have to be available to people to talk about what they're doing.
Yeah. Let's go to Joe, and then I'll move on. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Joe. You wanted to say something before Danny?
I think the difference here is, and this is the thing that I think with sports stars over something else, is sports stars, when they're being interviewed most of the time, most of the time, they're in the midst of their tournament. So they're right in the middle of doing what they have to do and concentrating on what they need to do. In the same intent, like when an actor's doing a press tour for a movie, that movie was long shot, and you know, because it was edited and all that stuff. And also, by the time it came out, they're no longer in character and things like that. But like, I mean, sometimes with these athletes, I mean, think about like if Lin-Manuel was doing Hamilton, and then he went backstage because they were doing a different scene, and a reporter walked up and shoved the mic in his face, started asking him questions. He's in the middle of the show. He's in the middle of character and things like that. And so I think a lot of times with sports athletes, it's the same kind of thing. Wait till the tournament's done and let them talk, you know, give them that time. If you're deep in the middle of the tournament, you're down, you know, you're down one game or two games or whatnot, or you're going to the next round or things like that. You know, give them the time to concentrate and do what they have to do. I mean, that's what I think the difference is here. Should you still promote stuff? Yeah. But I mean, like if you're deep in the middle of what you're doing, yeah, I think it's more important for you to concentrate on you performing at your best. You know, I think the Olympics sometimes gets a little bit too in athletes' faces too, when they're right in the middle mm-hmm. of stuff, and they got to concentrate on what they got to do and not ask questions, especially when they're dumb questions. So that's my feeling.
But with that logic though, Joe, that would be like saying, well, Lin-Manuel should not have talked about Hamilton until after he was done doing the show. Like, you know, like
after the show that night. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm not, what I'm saying, but they don't go up to like an athlete while they're, you know, like, they don't go up to a baseball player while he's at the plate waiting to hit. They wait till after the game to say, why did this happen? Why did that happen? You know, why did you make this decision? And again, I'm not saying that they have to be available all the time, but it's almost like saying that like, you know, they should have to, like, if there's 162 games in baseball, they have to be available 100 of those games during the course of the year to actually speak to reporters.
Wait, you know, so is she not doing any interviews at all? Is that what the issue is?
She's basically saying right now that she pulled out of the French Open, and she's probably going to pull out of other tournaments until Wimbledon now, because, well, now Wimbledon's actually coming up, so it's not an issue. But she's going to pull out of other tournaments, you know, until she feels comfortable with doing interviews again, because she feels that they're stopping her from you know, they're not going to let her, you know, play if she doesn't do the interviews. And the reality that is, again, if somebody's paying the bills, they're going to say there's certain rules. And again, that's, you know, she could choose not to do it and just not play.
Yeah.
And that's
funny. Yeah. I think it's the thing that I think wrinkles people who are on her side the most is just the idea that it's like a punishment for not complying. What it, in a way, it's almost saying like, I need a break. Can I have one? And everybody, whatever their job is entitled to some kind of break. You are allowed to say,
absolutely,
you know, I need to stop for a minute.
And that's the point I was trying to make, because I agree with Peter that, Elizabeth, there's a certain obligation, mm-hmm. you know, whether you're a celebrity, whether you're an athlete, you know, or a musician, but your mental health and your physical health come first, regardless of what job you're in. And if she needed to take a break, then so be it. You know, she would have continued in the tournament, but if she would have gone to the next press junket after the next match, it would have been all about why she didn't do the press the first time. You know, it would no longer be about the game. It would be about her. So that's why she withdrew. People who know about her story, she's still suffering from PTS from her U.S. Open win against Serena Williams, because a lot of people did not want her to win. They wanted Serena to win, and it all became such a big issue for her. She's still suffering from that, you know, and that's what some people may not understand, you know. So all the more power to her. I think it goes on an individual basis, but her mental health, and she's very young still, you know, that comes first. And if people don't like it, then too bad. Sorry. No, I'm on her side for this one.
Right. Like, she should be able to say, no, I don't want to do this. But then the sponsor should be able to say, well, then we don't want you to play. Like, I mean, it should go both ways.
No, but why isn't it just saying, I need a break from this one thing? Like, that's what seems so extreme about it, is just, you know, everybody's entitled to a day off. And the fact that her asking for this day off or this like, can I not do press for like one thing has to be like the end of it. That's the unfair
part.
But
they didn't give her any leeway. That's what you
said. Yeah, they're like, there's no leeway.
It was either like, you do this or you're out, pretty much. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah, that's fair to say. Okay, so let's move on to Meghan and Harry. So they had their baby over the weekend, a daughter named Lily Bette Diana, in honor of Queen Elizabeth and Harry's mother, Princess Diana. So my question to you is, have they transitioned from British royalty to Hollywood celebrity, and what is the difference? I personally am sick and tired of seeing these two on like everything. I am done with their news about them. Let's start with you, Elizabeth.
Yeah, they're full Hollywood.
They are so Hollywood. It's over.
Goofy first name for the kid. You know, chilling with Oprah in Malibu. It's over, man. There's no going back to the palace. Come on. I don't totally hate him for it. Doesn't matter really at the end of the day. The monarchy as it was in England was always eventually going to like go away at some point. I know it's a big tourism thing, but I also don't think like the English are that into it. It's kind of divided. I don't know for sure. I don't have a strong read on how the country fully feels one way or another, but it's, you know, but they've definitely, they're in the press cycle all the time. She's got the Father's Day book coming out. You know, it's the full Hollywood press business with them now versus, you know, but they can control more of it than they did with the UK. That's probably the biggest difference, actually.
To answer I think they still have the fame, but they have more control over it as opposed to them being royals. And I think that's maybe what she's wanted. I mean, again, I don't know about Harry because I think Harry's more, you know, like he really doesn't want to be in the limelight as much, but I think he's gotten kind of dragged into that now. And I was one of those people that I was always on Meghan Markle's side, but seeing everything now, I'm like, you know what? There's some truth to what he was saying about her, you know?
I think you're right. I think he doesn't, but I think it's also the flip side is he doesn't really know any other way of life.
Exactly.
But now he does know that you can control it better here with as the press in the United States. Versus the, you know, tabloid relationship that the firm, as it's called, has, where you're being covered and it is all for your benefit, but you have no control, or say the firm decides how your press interactions go. So
Pete,
I mean I tend to believe that the only big difference really is that As much as like the press is relentless towards the royals to a certain extent in the UK, there is a certain amount of decorum that surrounds them also, that at some point somebody says enough is enough and then they back off. I don't think that now as Hollywood celebrities, they're going to have that kind of anonymity. And maybe they don't want it. You know, as much as we might start to see that maybe all their talk about, like Meghan Markle's talk about, like never being able to be her own person and never being able to do things the way she would want to do. Well, maybe that was like one way when she was there, but here maybe it's going to be completely different because, you know, the difference between that then and now is that when you're a royal, you're born into something that you don't really have much of a choice on. Mm-hmm. When you're a celebrity, you do have a choice about being, you know, in the limelight as much as you choose to be. But you know, at the same time, like the limelight is what makes you a celebrity. So we're going to really learn how quickly, you know, how much of what they were saying, you know, applies to this side when now there's actually a tangible dollar amount to how much we see them all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that kind of like struck me kind of as odd is, you know, why they named her after Queen Elizabeth if she had such a horrible experience with them. I understand the Diana part. Or why not name her, you know, her mom's name and Princess Diana's name? Was that, so? I don't know, to me,
Well, I think it's, I think it's still trying to stay good with the family, you know, in the long run. But she's not Elizabeth, so there's not all the weight of being named directly after your great-grandma. It's your great-grandma's nickname, Lilibet, or, you know, Lilibet or whatever. And then they're just going to call her Lily, I think. So it kind of, it's further and further removed from being like, our daughter is named Elizabeth after her great grandmother. I'm just saying Elizabeth's a cool name, though. You know, two queens. This could be worse names you could give your kid. Just saying.
It's okay.
Fair enough. So before we go on to our main topic, I have one final just one question that I really want to talk about with you guys. Last week, former The Office and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt star Ellie Kemper found herself in the middle of a racist controversy when photos of her appeared when she was 19 years old at a St. Louis ball held by an organization that had discriminated against African Americans and Jews until the early 1970s. This morning, she responded by saying, "When I was 19 years old, I decided to participate in a debutante ball in my hometown. The century-old organization that hosted the debutante ball had an unquestionably racist, sexist, and elitist past. I was not aware of the history at the time, but ignorance is no excuse. I was old enough to have educated myself before getting involved. My question is, have we reached a point that no one can ever say I was young? And what do you do when you're young is no indication of what you'll do when you're older and not apologize? Or is the apology appropriate?" Thoughts? Pete, let's start with you.
Well, I mean, I thought because it took her almost a week to say anything that she was just going to let it blow over. And you know what? And the reality of it is that whole thing about like ignorance isn't an excuse. Fuck that. The ignorance is completely an excuse, because when you're 19 years old, there's a lot of things you're going to do. Now the story behind this whole thing is that, yes, this was an organization that all the way up until sometime in the 1970s, they did discriminate against blacks and Jews. Now, by the time she was a debutante in 1999, it was probably almost 20, there was over 20 years of time between their racist past and then. It's almost like saying, well, you know what? I have to apologize because at one time I lived in Georgia. Well, I lived in Georgia, and I know that they used to be for slavery there. So I should have probably not lived in Georgia. Well, guess what? You know, people do things that when you're young, that you're not going to do older. Now, I'm not saying that, like, if she had murdered somebody and then we found about it years later, that she shouldn't apologize for it or she shouldn't be held accountable for it. But this is such nonsense. And I don't understand why more celebrities aren't just getting to a point where they're going to say, you know what, do me a favor. The first person that hasn't ever been involved in something that they went back and said oops about years later, they should come and talk to me. And everybody else should keep their mouth shut, because I don't have to answer something that happened when I was 19. You know, it's like, I don't get it. And I don't know why she would be so quick she wasn't quick, it took her a week, but why she would say that ignorance isn't an excuse. Of course it's an excuse.
Do you think it took her a week to do this because she wasn't going to say anything? And she shouldn't have to say anything.
You know what? I genuinely think
pressure too, because like, oh, here I go, they're going to cancel me if I don't.
This is, when it's this many days, this is handlers. This is no longer the person. This is somebody that came to her a week later and said, the story's still out there. And because the story's still out there, we have to address it. And so, yeah, this was a handler telling her she had to do it.
I'm Joe, and then I'll go to Elizabeth. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, listen, I grew up in New Jersey, and I'm pretty sure that I've went to a couple either weddings or like birthday parties or something like that that had some organizations in it that, you know, typically would rub people out. but no one's calling anybody out on that. So, yeah, you know what it is? It's one of those things where you're young and you're doing something that you think is fun and exciting, and you don't look into, oh, my God, what did these guys do 20, 30 years ago? Pete's right. Like, you know, Pete and I both at one point lived in Florida. Should we have not lived in Florida because of that state's past as well? I mean, currently that state's present too, but.
Joe, should we not go to Disneyland because they made the Song of the South? I mean, it's like, it's like there's so many you know, dumb things behind this.
Or that Disney was a union buster and it might have been anti-Semitic. Hey.
Yeah.
Oh, he was definitely anti-Semitic. Who we get it?
Elizabeth?
Yeah, it's so, yeah, it really is starting to be like, hey, you know, if you're without sin, cast the first stone. And I know it's a lot of the younger generation thinking they've never made a mistake, but surely someone will come to them in the future and say, hey, what you said about X, Y, and Z was not cool. And they're just not thinking, I think, that far ahead. And I understand being like, oh, she took part in this weird ball. Like, yeah, maybe she, you know, in all fairness, yeah, she probably didn't really know anything about it. You're asked to do a lot of weird things by your family. I think there's just weird backlash too, because she's like super rich and people are now just realizing a lot of comedians who are like high level, you know, comedy stars or whatever, have rich parents. Like Nick Kroll is like got a billionaire dad or something like that, and being like, wait, they didn't all struggle like me, and, you know, and there's, I think, a weird backlash against that. I almost have more questions about the organization, though, because it's not just that they like were racist and anti-Semitic. There's like, oh, there's the veiled prophet. They don't reveal who he is. It's very fucking weird. Like that should almost be the bigger issue that people should be focusing on, is less that this ultimately random person took place in it and happened to be famous 20 years after the fact. It's what the fuck is that organization doing in the city? You should probably check up on them now to make sure they're not doing anything
weird.
They're
still not doing anything.
Yeah, because it's like weird. It was, as everyone pointed out, no, it was not a KKK-run thing, but the person who founded it, I believe, was a former Klansman.
Yeah, it was a Confederate soldier.
He's a Confederate soldier, and, you know, this weird veiled prophet thing with anything with, like, hoods and masks and secrets and, man, just check that shit. That's the deeper problem than one, you know, ignorant white girl in 1999.
I agree 100%. I mean, use it as a learning experience. And yeah. Say, what's up with this organization? Are they still around or not?
Yeah, because they keep saying like, they control
if they are.
that like all the richest families in St. Louis, where this is, are involved in it and theoretically kind of control and run the city. I don't know. That seems like a way bigger thing to check into than like, hey, that chick from the office may have made a dumb mistake 20 years ago. You know, and I know it raised a lot of people's questions of like, wait, is she like been secretly racist this whole time? That wouldn't be cool. But then there's never been any other story ever about her be acting that way. So, you know, I'm sure I've like probably said or done something stupid in the past, probably even with the show. And I wouldn't want someone to assume, you know, bad things about me that way. But if our show was also like deeply involved in weird cult shit, I'd want someone to investigate that, but we're not. Thank God.
Come on, be honest.
I mean, we are part of the Hollywood satanic cabal. Sorry, I forgot to bring the deviled eggs to the cabal last week. My bad.
That's because you go to the North Hollywood one.
And you go to the
what's going on down here in the Hollywood one.
It's the annex chapter of the cabal.
Yeah, you're in the annex up there in North Hollywood.
If we all look back to our 19-year-old selves, I mean, trust me, there's things that I'm like, I know I am not proud of doing or hanging out with certain people that I used to hang out with. We all kind of have, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
I'm sorry. Those TikToks are going to bite y'all in the ass in 20 years.
Yeah,
good
but, like,
fucking
other
luck.
Things, I was just thinking about it when you're talking about it because somebody had like shamed me because I drove a Volkswagen. And like, he's like, oh, you know, my parents don't even let me drive one because, you know, they were founded by Nazis. I'm like, that was a damn long time ago. And there's no Nazis there anymore. I mean, shame me because they did a diesel scandal. But I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, that's kind of crazy. And I do know, well, most of them are probably dead now. But I did know some old guys that refused to drive a Japanese car because they fought the Japanese in World War II. So...
Yeah,
exactly. It really, like I said, it's I don't know why, how, or when we all, and I'm sorry, it is a lot of the younger, you know, up and coming generation, decide that you have to live a perfect, you know, existence, because they don't, but I don't know why they're acting like they do, just because they are, in theory, more woke, and I'm pretty sure I'm just as accepting, or trying to be as accepting of, like, everybody and everything, and I don't do anything active, but I also think they like flip out if you don't. It's like you just can't fucking win.
You can't win. Yeah.
I just realized this background makes me look like I have a tiny hat, like I'm Captain Spaulding or something.
Okay, so let's move on to our main story tonight. Last week, an article written for Medium by Erica Dawin went viral after she coined the term geriatric millennial, which are people born between 1980 and 1985, and then went on to explain how these people are going to be essential in leading us out of the pandemic. So I was going to ask everyone on the panel if any of you were born between 80 and 85, so I'm only going to ask Elizabeth.
I am 1 year late, technically. For this definition. But I feel like it's ever shifting, because it used to be they were the Oregon Trail generation, and I think that went up to 86. It's such an arbitrary line. Sorry, my cat's in the way of the camera. Hi, buddy, if you're watching the video. But it's such an arbitrary line that they keep changing. They keep changing what it means and why it's impactful. I don't care. Okay, so I do know I'm an elder millennial at this point, and that people still go like, oh, these millennials just fresh out of college. It's like, no, millennials are like starting to push 40. Like, you got to stop acting like we're teenagers. We're not. Sorry.
So then I was going to ask if anybody was born within that time frame, if you felt like a geriatric, but it doesn't apply to anyone on today's panel. So who read the article, and can you give us an overview of this just briefly? Just give
us out of time.
Okay, Pete, go ahead.
It's an interesting article because the woman who wrote it, she apparently does a lot of like work with companies as far as like how they handle interpersonal relationships in the companies, you know, and just about productivity. And what she's claiming is that if you were born between 1980 and 1985, you were the first generation that was born using a computer from the first second that you could actually, you know, use a computer in your life. And then because of that, you were part of the generation that created what essentially was the biggest parts of the internet, meaning stuff like Facebook and the guy who created Airbnb. And
that also includes me. Why is 85 the cutoff? That doesn't make any sense.
Because I'll explain. She said, okay, if you were born just before then, you were already, by the time computers had started becoming prevalent, you were already kind of out of school and in the workforce. Mm-hmm. And if you were born after 1985, you were probably too late to the game to be like a captain of industry in the internet field, which the argument for this makes really doesn't have any real merit, because the reality of it is the internet wouldn't exist if it wasn't for people that are now in their 60s and 70s. Yeah. You know, and then stuff like Google and Yahoo and some of the most important sites were built by people that would be arguably called Gen Xers. Mm-hmm. And so that the idea that like this small window of people who were the first millennials, I guess, have so much to offer. It's kind of a weird argument, because the things that she makes argument for in there is that like, millennials are that group of millennials is the most comfortable on something like a Zoom meeting, because older people that are older than being born in 1980, older than 1980, mm-hmm. That they don't have digital body language, which mm-hmm. was one of the things I had to look up and try and understand. But apparently, there are some people, some business people who are now trying to teach people, you know, digital body language, meaning that the way you look during a Zoom meeting will tell a client how you really feel about them and about your products or about whatever you're trying to convince them of doing business with you on. So older people aren't good with digital body language. They're not good with communicating over different forms of internet communication, like Messenger or through text messages. That people like my age say the word "so" when we type things into messages, and somehow or another that disqualifies us from being relevant.
Sometimes it's just good grammar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then what's funnier is people under the age group, that people 86 or later, mm-hmm. they don't know how to do basic things like take messages when somebody calls an office, that they're not.
Well, I do.
And that they don't know how to they don't know how to react to people in authority. But somehow or another, if you were born in that short period of time, you got the sweet spot where you know how to do everything.
Is the author born in this sweet spot?
No, she actually isn't. Which she says she's on the very cusp of it. She said she's So I guess she's either 79, 80, somewhere in that range.
All right.
And so she coined the phrase geriatric millennials, and it caused a shitstorm because now all these millennials and Gen Zers who embrace the fact that they are those things think it's ageist to call some group of them like old.
Well, yes. I was going to add, it was met with criticism by two groups of people. So you have the millennials in that age group that were unhappy being defined in some sense as old, and younger or older people who felt that they were just as equipped to come out of the pandemic as any other age group. So like Pete was saying, this is crazy. So since we have people of different ages here on our panel, do you feel like you're going to be able to reconfigure your lives based on whatever changes are going to come out of this pandemic? And is there any relevance, to the idea that any one age group could handle this better than others? This is interesting because there's so many layers to these. I mean, it could be so many different answers. Go ahead, Elizabeth. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't think any one age group is better suited to come out of this because it's for this all age groups. None of us were around in 1918 when the last like major pandemic occurred. So no, there's no precedent to be like, once you get out of the pandemic, this is how you should handle it. Because it's all arbitrary and it doesn't matter. And actually, I was just talking to my mom the other night because she was reading or looking at something about people, women having like meltdowns about like what they're going to wear back to work. I'm like, just fucking wear what you were wearing before. Like, and they were trying to be like, but styles have changed. I'm like, no, they haven't. Nothing has really moved forward in the past year. So you can wear what you were wearing in 2019. It's fine. Or early 2020. Not that much has changed that drastically in that time. I know they're always pushing this like generational divide thing. And I think the geriatric thing rubs millennials the wrong way too, because we are getting older now. Like I was saying, I am 35, I'm in my mid 30s, and I was looking at TikTok today because I am a full grown woman on TikTok. I don't care. Anyone can do anything they want. It doesn't matter. it was some younger person saying something like, are we going to be asked about the pandemic the way we ask older people about 9/11? Now that means, yeah, I'm an older person who was around for 9/11, as we all are on this panel, but that apently is destroying people like, oof, I'm getting old. And I think it's a bigger reaction now because for the longest time, millennials were those young, terrible youngsters who were, we were destroying industries because we wouldn't do anything. And it's just all this arbitrary, divisiveness for clickbait, honestly, and excuses to ignore bigger, realer problems. But yeah, like ultimately I will say there are, people are also seem to freak out about having to talk on the phone or like make their own appointments. There's a weird infantilization that we got to chill out on too, because it's like, how are you going to get through your life? I don't know.
Deanna, you wanted to say something before that. Did you want to add something?
I think the baby boomer generation is going to come out the best just because they're the ones that complain the least about the
they also have the most money, by the way. And there was actually an article, I think, from Forbes that basically millennials have one last grasp at like acquiring enough wealth to like hold on to it and build it the way boomers do. And it's like going to disappear in like the next few years. After that, we're fucked. There's no die. We'll never earn the same way they did. And they don't care, but it is also our fault, but it is their fault.
Yeah, because it just seemed like baby boomers, they got the second shot, they were fine. They didn't complain. My mom, for example, she's like, I'm fine. It doesn't hurt. Stop asking. They were fine. They're the ones that feel more comfortable going out, and taking trips, just speaking from experience. My mom's been on a few trips already, and she's having a great time, as are her peers as well. They're at that age where, if you want to stay home, just stay home. You're retired, have fun. You want to go out? Okay, now that people are being able to go out, go out and have a good time. She had a great time at Disneyland the other day, and I just think, if there's a generation that might just show us how to get it together, it might be them, learn from our parents pretty much, you know, because it's, sorry, not to offend anybody, but it's not going to be the millennials.
Gentle disagree, because the boomers are also the ones who melt down about being asked to wear masks in stores. So there's that too. Sometimes, not always.
Hey, Joe?
All right, I'm going to want to defend Gen X here, that I'm part of Gen X. Because we started out with none of this stuff, but we were the pioneers of it. We were the pioneers that brought it all into the world. So we've had to kind of go both ways. We've constantly had to go through change. And a lot of times change that happened a lot faster than what the millennials had gone through. So I think that Gen X is kind of more ready for it. But I think that Gen X has always been the one group that no one talks about, because we really don't complain, because we're so used to constantly stuff changing on us all the time. You know, like you know, how many, they always say, oh, you know, kids don't know how to write in cursive anymore. We can write in cursive, we can write in code, we can do all of that stuff, because we're the guys that started it. So, you know, we just kind of, we've learned to, over the years, roll with things. And so we roll with it and really don't complain that much about it. So I think that that's really more the group that's going to come out on top.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think also, you know, I mean, what am I considered, Pete? Like, you know, I was born in 77. So what is that considered? Is
you're Gen X, right?
There's so many different terms that are coming out, and I'm like, I don't even know what I have anymore. Because again, we didn't have a choice. We just dealt with shit when we were young too. Even when we were younger, like, you know, if I would complain about something, my parents would be like, just suck it up and just deal with it. And that's how we were raised. You know, we weren't, you know, and I think it's really funny too that, you know, and I do say this sometimes, and some of my friends who are parents are like, oh, it's because you don't have kids that you don't understand. But like, you know, when they say like, oh, you know, kids nowadays, you know, high school students, they're going through this horrible time during this pandemic. They have no interaction with each other. I'm like, they have Zoom, they have FaceTime, they have everything, you know, they're, I mean, I'm sorry, we had none of that. Imagine if, you know, we were in high school during this pandemic. I mean, yeah, we had a phone, we could talk to our friends, but now these younger generations have access to everything, and they're still complaining that they're not so, I'm like, guess what? Even if they were in school, they're still on their phones all the time. So where is that socialization taking place? That just irks me. And whenever I say that to friends of mine, they're like, oh, well, you don't understand because you don't have kids, but my child is going through a really hard time right now because she wants to be at school with her friends. And I'm what is she doing? They're on their, they have access to everything now virtually. We had nothing. If this was,
there is something to human to human contact that, like, I get what you're saying, but there is, yeah, is truly something to interpersonal
than any of us.
If we had phones,
there was no call waiting. So you could be calling your friend, Veronica, and it'd be like, you know, boop, 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 boop.
I did not have a phone in my room.
So that's what I'm saying, because we had a phone, but it was like stuck to the wall in the kitchen. So if we did want to interact with our friends, everybody heard what we were talking about.
No, we had one in the kitchen.
That was even worse.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I think that like to say that any one group is going to come out of this better than another group is to basically discount people's ability to change and and to adapt to things. I mean, you know what? We're a perfect example. Looking at this group right here, we're a perfect example of people that have all had to figure out how to adapt to the situation we've been in. You know, each one of us has had to stop doing something we enjoyed doing or that we did for financial gain prior to this, and we found other ways to keep ourselves busy. This show being one of those ways. You know, because this was a reaction to not being able to have a theater show and also not to have the interpersonal relationships that we would have had being around each other. And that grew out of this. But like anything else, you know, you hopefully look at this pandemic, I'm sure the same way they did when the 1918 pandemic ended, and say, what good things came out of it? What did we learn about human nature, about business, about economies that's better now than it was then? And you have to think to yourself that, yeah, there are going to be changes. And the thing is, there are going to be people that are going to embrace those changes and they're going to do well with it. And there are going to be people that are not. And it doesn't matter what age you are. What does matter is that if you're somebody that says, oh, the pandemic just struck me down and now I have to figure out how to start all over again. And I'm in over my head and I can't do it. you're basically going to be the kind of person that was going to be that way regardless, because life throws curveballs at you.
Boy, does it.
What?
I said, boy, does it, wink, wink.
Yeah, it does. I mean, like, yeah, like your situation, Elizabeth. I mean, you know, you went through cancer, and that's not something that you did.
And a pandemic.
Like it's not that you did it because you were a smoker or because you did something that inherently causes people to get cancer. You got cancer because it just happened.
And I did go visit Chernobyl for fun. I'm just
kidding. Yeah, there you go. But
I insist it was a past life mistake. But that's
just as traumatic, probably more traumatic, because that is a physical thing that's happening to you, and you had, and you know, you could have shut down and said, oh, you know what, woe is me, I'm never gonna, you know, why was I chosen for this? And the problem is that is just not, you know, in your nature, and it's not in a lot of people's nature.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The people that are like that are not going to succeed. It does not matter what age group they're in. You know, and it's funny because, like, I went and looked at some well-known people that were born between 1980 and 1985 to try and figure out how are they going to help us get through the pandemic. And what I found was that Kim Kardashian is probably not going to help us get through the pandemic. Neither is Channing Tatum. Chrissy Teigen sure as fuck is not going to help us get through the pandemic.
She's going to be mean to you about it.
Yeah. James.
You know someone who will? Chris Evans.
Yeah, Chris Evans might.
I love
yes.
Chris Evans. He's a that humanitarian. Dude is he's smart. He's great. Gorgeous. He's everything. He's just perfect.
But is Mila Kunis or Jonah Hill going to really, are they going to come up with something that's going to make our lives better for the future because of the pandemic? I mean, that's the thing. Like,
no, our only hope
all people Chris born. Evans. Katy Perry right. is definitely not going to help us. I mean, it's.
Hey.
I mean, it's just.
What about Meghan Markle?
Yeah, Meghan Markle's in there. I mean, it's like so many people in that group that you could say to yourself, you know what? These people were born in that time and they've got a megaphone and they could probably be of some use to us. They're not going to be. You know why? Because what they're going to do is they're going to try and get their brand back to where it was beforehand, because it was really good beforehand. So the job isn't to try and make the world different now. It's trying to make the world back to some kind of version where somebody on a Sunday night might want to find out, you know, if Khloe Kardashian got a pap smear last week on TV. Like that's what they're hoping we're going to get to that point of. And the reality of it is, it doesn't matter what generation you are. You know, you're either going to succeed or fail based on how much you actually care about succeeding and failing.
Yeah.
Listen, those will come out the best.
That Maker's Mark cast that they gave her, she's going to share it with everybody.
Right.
Those will come out the best is the generation that got vaccinated. So go get vaccinated, people.
Yes. So basically then to end tonight's show, we can just, you know, kind of put all our hopes on Chris Evans to be the one to.
He's got America's ass,
what about
baby.
Kelly Clarkson? She's America's treasure now.
She dethroned Ellen, baby. Hell yeah.
And she got her time slot.
Yeah.
Bruno Mars, another guy born in that era.
Paris Hilton.
She might turn it all around for this.
I know. It's Chris Evans is the only one.
Bruno Mars did leave the door open.
Yeah.
Well done.
On that note, Veronica.
That's a good way to sign off. So that is our show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow at 6 p.m. with the host of the podcast, FDR's Wheelchair. Have a good night, everyone, and stay safe. Bye.